What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 54 of The Overview. I'm Chan Man V, and joined today by Fish Sticks, like every week. What's up, Ben?
Yeah. Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Good.
And look who we're joined by. Not only Dobo, our very special guest, but Flame, who hasn't been on the show for quite a few weeks.
Hey, Flame is very special to me, too, so don't just give me the very special thing.
Okay, we've had you on the show, like, twice before Doa.
Was it twice or was it once? I can't remember.
Once or twice.
Yeah, I think it was, okay. Yeah. It was a while back, but we caught you when Overwatch or Korean Overwatch was just getting going, right? And you were telling us about the first few tournaments and so it's a long ways from there right now. It's a long ways. Yes, definitely. But welcome, Flame. How's it going, man?
Pretty good. I just read Twitter. Apparently, they want us to discuss something Scott Mercer posted 15 minutes ago, so I'll send that to you guys.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay. I'm doing this.
Oh, man. Okay.
What is it? I'm waiting.
Yeah.
It's something about assault maps, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. God. All right. I hope it's a change. It's some kind of change.
I'm midway reading it, but.
Okay. Well,
it's like hot off the press. So sorry.
Oh, it's coming straight from Griffin. Okay.
Straight from Griffin. All right. That'll be. We'll definitely touch on that, I'm sure, during the patch discussion. But lots to talk about today. Of course, with Doa on here, we're going to get an update from him, see how he's doing. Just lots of life changes going on, so I can't wait for that. And then we're going to be talking about Apex Season 2, of course, which wrapped up this last week with an exciting finish, too. So we can get the lowdown on everything there. Of course, Overwatch Pit Championships, which is in the middle of the playoffs, as well as the big event that launched today, the Overwatch Uprising. Overwatch Uprising, right? The official title of the thing with the new PvE, as well as all the patch changes that were already on the PTR for a while going out into the wild. And then lastly, any questions that some folks might have, we'll definitely be covering it. So lots to talk about, so might as well get started right now with Doa. And, we're watching the Apex Finals, and during that long break during the Apex Finals, you guys decided to announce you guys are leaving Korea, which is crazy because you've been there forever now. I feel like, we've been following StarCraft, obviously me, Ben, and actually even Flame for a long time. And I remember when you moved there, and it seems like forever since you've been back to the U.S.
It feels like forever. I mean, Korea is like as much my home now as the U.S. is my home. I feel so. Mm-hmm. It kind of feels like leaving home again, but and I've never lived in the LA area, which is where we'll be, so we can be close to Blizz HQ. So that'll be a new experience. But yeah, it's we had a good opportunity come our way in, the Overwatch League and all that. So time to go, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, I think this is the official. This is the first, I say, official sign that somebody's been hired, at least talent wise, for the Overwatch League. So that's really exciting.
That's really exciting.
And you guys must be extremely psyched about it.
Yeah, we're really pumped, obviously. I mean, we actually signed these contracts back in like October of last year. So we've had to keep it secret for a long, long time. I mean, I'm actually amazed that nobody, that this didn't get leaked earlier, because it seemed like it was, at least to people outside of, some of the industry people that knew, it seemed like it was pretty much a surprise to everyone. But so that's amazing, because there's almost no such thing as a surprise in esports. So we're proud of that one.
I feel, yeah.
Was anybody here surprised? Let's be honest.
There was a point in time, I think at BlizzCon or something, it was either BlizzCon or MLG, where I was just like, something's going on here, but it wasn't like too obvious, I guess. I wasn't shocked. I don't think anyone was shocked. The timing.
I mean, the Korean media knew for a long time, because,
oh really? Wow.
Obviously we had to like tell OGN that we were leaving, and they had to like get ready to find new people, so Atlas is like one of the new casters, obviously, that's been hired by OGN to replace us. So like the Korean media knew for a long time, but they were kind enough to just like not say anything.
And they're afraid of Monty's wrath.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. They're just, it's interesting, because if you can be like, hey guys, can you please just not say anything about this for a while? They'll be like, okay, which would not happen in the US.
So journalism is not entirely comprised by leaks out there. That's
not fake news. Right. Not fake news at all.
Yeah, things are semi-coordinated. It's interesting, but no, it's just been like an amazing time in Korea. You know, I came out to do StarCraft 2 at GOM TV and did a bunch of seasons of Codain, GSTL, and some other stuff in there too. And then did IPL, you know, IPL Team League, IPL Fight Club, all that stuff for a few months. And then OGN, you know, seasons of StarCraft, OGN, OSL, WCS.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. The first day of Pro League, we did the first day of Pro League because there was that big argument between, like, Kespa, OTV, and OGN and all that. And they weren't going to have an English cast. And so I actually had, like, coffee with one of the big people from, like, SpoTV and Kespa and all that. And, like, I talked to OGN guys. I'm like, just let us do the first match in English so it's there. You know, we can work out all this, like, other stuff later. Just let us do the match. So Monty and I casted the first day of Pro League and then never cast anymore. And then, you know, a bunch of League of Legends.
Yeah.
And now, and a bunch of Hearthstone and now some Overwatch. Now it's time to go back to the US. So, yeah.
No,
it's been a long time.
I remember that first WCS season, Doa, out there in Korea. That was a good time.
Yeah.
Then you had, of course, Monty casting the game. And like, yeah, he knows StarCraft. Like, yeah, so it was good times.
It was fun. We had fun casting it. It was really awkward to be casting the same games at the same time as Tastosis. None of us like, you know, we hated it, they hated it, but it was just weird contractual broadcasting thing between the companies out there. So we had to do that for a couple seasons.
Yeah.
So it was nice when that ended, but yeah, that was weird. It was fun casting the games, but it was just a really awkward situation.
So definitely been living in Korea for a long time now. So if any favorite moments or places you're going to miss, you know, having to move back?
I'm going to miss a lot of places, but honestly, I mean, I'm not like, at first I was like, oh man, this might be the last time I eat at this restaurant or something, but which could be true because restaurants cycle so fast here. But, you know, now that, I'm married to a Korean and I've got like Korean family and all that here, I'm going to be back at least two or three times a year just to visit people, you know, if not for, you know, esports reasons. So I'm going to be back pretty frequently. So, you know, I'm going to miss a lot of stuff, but, you know, I know I'm going to get a chance to, you know, climb some of the same mountains I like out here and visit, you know, the same like video game, like vintage video game marts that I like out here again. So I'll miss being able to do it whenever I want, but, you know, I think I'll be able to do it again someday, I guess.
Well, I've noticed that when Western casters go out to Korea, they usually stay for like 3 to 5 to 10 years. Most people, like, they actually never come back. So
yeah,
something in the water.
I mean, Korea is a wonderful place to visit, but also a wonderful place to live, apparently.
Yeah, it really is. It's an amazing place to live. I love it. I mean, what I've seen over the years for like players and talent that comes out, it's very black and white. Like, either you love it and you'll stay forever, or you just hate it right away and you don't last, you know, because we've had people come out here that haven't lasted too. And they just, you know, haven't had the same experience for whatever reason. Yeah, I mean, I'm the only one who's went to Korea and then left Korea and then came back to Korea. And, you know, Monty and I are the only ones who've been in Korea and then, like, left for other esports gigs that I'm aware of. I can't think of anyone else that's been there for a long time and then left.
Do you feel like you're, like, promoted?
No, not really.
It seems like such a big change, I guess. I don't know. It's interesting. Yeah.
I mean, it's a big change, but it's a big, you know, it's obviously a big risk professionally, right? Because while obviously Monty and I have a ton of confidence in the Overwatch League and we think it's going to be huge and we're going to work as hard as we can to make it huge, you know, nobody knows the future. So, you know, obviously you're taking a risk when you, you know, make a big move like that. But I think, you know, part of being successful, talented in esports is taking risks. I mean, like, I quit a okay job to come out to Korea in the first place to make like $150 per broadcast at GOM TV. So I was like flat broke for the first couple of years. And so it's not like risk is something that's, you know, new to me or new to anyone who's like an esports professional, you know?
Well, those are esports bucks though. So they're at least worth a roughly double what they normally would be. To us.
They go farther in Korea anyway.
So this is bittersweet for you. Definitely, right?
Very. Yeah, I'm very, very bittersweet. You know, because when you're at a place for a long time, you know, it's really hard to leave, you know, because we're certainly not leaving OGN because we had any sort of problems with them or anything. We love OGN, you know, and there was a point where I could just see myself there forever. You know, if this hadn't come up, we'd still be there with no plans at all, you know, for leaving. So it is very bittersweet. It's going to take a little bit longer for my wife's visa to finish too. So she's going to be here and I'll be there. So that kind of sucks a little bit too, but yeah, just as far as like being in Korea for so long, like, you know, you miss the people and just the way that OGN and Korea does esports in general. They like OGN is just so perfect at having that blend of really emotional, serious storytelling with like just goofy stuff, right? Like where you have the runaway players like trying to make the loudest noise they can with a microphone and stuff, you know. They do that so well. So I hope we can like build that kind of vibe in the US, you know, with the Overwatch League. But Korea does it so well, it's hard to leave.
It's true. It's definitely okay. For sure, it's a much more okay to do it over there. I think we all laugh at it. But if that ever happened in MLG, I mean, people would be capping all over.
We can figure something out.
Yeah,
probably. I want to figure something out.
So you mentioned you know just risk and you know you taking this job as being a big risk. We really haven't had a chance, you know, given that you haven't been on in a while. We didn't really get a chance to ask you about, you know, just your thoughts on Overwatch, you know, you taking the dive into Overwatch, because, you know, you guys left casting League of Legends, of course, right? And you guys being super successful with that. So, yeah, talk to us about that. What do you see in Overwatch in the next year or 5 years?
I personally, you know, have said this the whole way through to anyone that's asked me about it, is that I think the game is absolutely the right thing at the right time. And I know it's going to be huge. And you know, while there is risk doing, you know, leaving for the Overwatch League, I wouldn't call it a big risk. I don't personally think that there's a very high likelihood that this thing isn't going to be amazing. So, you know, I just think the game is great. I think it has obviously some growth that it needs to go through yet. The spectator mode needs a lot of work, obviously. But the thing I've always said is that the platform is there, right? The base game is so fun, so good. And we know the other things are going to get fixed over time. And we have already seen like some of that with like the new kill feed and all that, you know, the floating life bars, you know, thank you Blizzard for putting that in, because that's great to have on the cast and all that too. So, you know, I have a lot of confidence in the future of Overwatch, and I think it's hard not to when you play the game. And also this has been the most fun I've had playing a game that I've casted. Like out of all the games I've casted, I've never had as much fun playing the game as I have with Overwatch.
I mean, the thing about Overwatch League is even if it doesn't live up to its expectations, it's still the best-selling PC game of all time outside of Minecraft. It's still Blizzard, Activision Blizzard bankrolling this thing. We know there's going to be so much investment in it. Like, even in the absolute worst-case scenario that anyone could imagine, there's still, like, years of Overwatch League in front of us. And that's, like, as low as it goes. I can't possibly imagine that it's not going to at least live up to kind of where we're expecting it to go. It's a pretty safe move ultimately.
We think so too. And I mean, there was just the interview with Cloud9 Jack the other day, you know, saying that, and he was saying a lot of positive things about the league. And, you know, a lot of people are worrying, you know, what's going to happen to some of the endemic organizations with, you know, supposedly so much money coming in from like these bigger sports organizations and bigger investors. And so it's nice to see, you know, Jack from Cloud9 being so positive about it too.
Well, he's preparing for it too. You know, he's going to be one of those endemic organizations that's, you know, making preps and probably going to get one of those bids.
Yeah, we'll see. It's going to be really interesting to see, you know, who ends up where with the league. That'll be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with both of you guys. I feel like the Overwatch League itself and how it's executed, I think, is the only part that I think some folks are worried about, but Overwatch as an IP, I feel like is, you know, not even halfway, you know, fully realized. I mean, we haven't even talked about, you know, just any of the movie aspects or the comic, or just as the IP grows in popularity in multiple medias. We haven't even touched on that yet.
I mean, even today's patch was insane from like a game expansion standpoint, I think.
I haven't played that yet, and it's killing me.
Oh, really? Oh, man. Yeah. I should
do it right after this and just kind of forego any other responsibilities I had.
Absolutely.
Sounds smart.
Well, why don't we talk about Apex, given that you're fresh off casting Apex, the entire season 2.
Yeah.
And this season of Apex has been really good. Like, it's been the first time I've felt that we're starting to see where Overwatch esports should be, you know, in terms of a lot of the coordination and storylines, superstars emerging, matchups. I mean, it's the stuff I love to talk about, especially in team esports. And
yeah, this season has been so awesome. I mean, the difference in skill between the teams in Overwatch Apex season 2 and season 1 is just mind blowing. They got way better than I thought they would this season.
Yeah, and it's so funny how some teams just kind of flipped too. You know, Runaway particularly. Yeah. Like, I mean, going from promotions to the finals is incredible.
Or like BK Stars, who looked like they might be turning into something pretty good at the end of last season, and then this season they just totally botched everything.
Exactly.
That was disappointing.
So a lot of people have been talking about North American teams recently, right? Just some of them having great weeks or great months and then they're dropping off. I mean, it happens to Korean teams too, guys. It's not just...
Oh, yeah, of course. It happens to every team. I mean, it's a team made up of individuals, and individuals can have, you know, slumps and good times, and communication can break down. So, I mean, it's just kind of the nature of a team game. And also there's still, you know, so much roster shuffling going on, not just in Korea, but like everywhere. So, you know. Consistency is not something anyone should be expecting from any team right now.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't we dive into the finals, and then I think we'll maybe talk about the season as a whole, you know, just what your thoughts were and everything. But Lunatic High versus Runaway. I picked Runaway. I know Flame picked Lunatic High. We were talking about it like right before. Fishsticks, I'm not sure who you picked. Who'd you have?
Going into it, Lunatic High.
Okay, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, how about you?
I agree. I said Lunatic High 4-2 was going to be my prediction, because although Runaway had like a great season and there's a ton of talent on that team, and Lunatic High tends to be very one-dimensional, and you know they've got ESCA problems. They're still like the more experienced team, and they weren't going to like collapse in the booth. I knew like Runaway had a chance of doing, and so. The finals was like really close, but I think in the end, like the determining factors ended up being what kind of everybody thought it was going to be, where it's like, well, you know, either if like Runner Eska has like a really good day, that might be enough to tip the scales too. And Eska had like a really good finish to that match. So I think a lot of people were saying Lunatic High going into it, and it was close. When it was 3-1 Runaway, I was like, I don't know, maybe I should revise my predictions, but Lunatic High came back, so.
Well, it made for a great, exciting series when that happened, you know, them coming back. Runaway really lost steam. I mean, visibly lost steam at the end, too. And we had Runner posting just a lot of reasons why, and whether it was fatigue and all these things. But I know it's definitely an exciting finish. And we had a lot of epic, you know, a lot of people that actually rose to the occasion. And then... and we keep on bringing Eska, you know, and I was talking to Flame about this. It's like, yeah, with exception for the Ultimates, I mean, Eska played amazing. I mean, Eska was literally, I think, the difference between Lunatic High being a Apex winning team to being knocked out in the quarterfinals. Yeah. It's really just his play, right?
It's everybody, but Eska, here's the thing is like when Korean Overwatch started coming up, I was a big Eska fan. I thought he was great. I really loved his McCree specifically. And I think his McCree is still pretty good, but his McCree and his Mei were what really impressed me. And, you know, he played okay Tracer and all that too. But then this season, I mean, yeah, the guy really struggled. And even going into the finals, like his pulse bombs were not good at all. But he was able to pull it together in the end, which is what mattered, you know, and I think he was a big part of what helped them win that match. But like Eska is a very contentious topic among in like Korean Overwatch right now. Cause a lot of people are like, oh, he sucks. He's terrible and all that. And you know, Monty was a bit hard on him over the course of the season. And you can't disagree with a lot of what he said, because you know, when he said it, Eska was genuinely playing very poorly and bringing the team down. Mm-hmm. But you know, I remembered how good Eska was and I knew what he could be. And you would see like, you would see flashes of that in his McCree play and whenever he'd play Mei. And I think Mei is his best hero
right
now. But you know, you'd see that old Eska in there. So I'm like, okay, if this guy, if he gets it together, if he comes back, this team is like unstoppable. And so, you know, finally he came back in the playoffs. I think like in the quarterfinals, he looked better. And then in the semifinals, he looked even better. And then in the grand finals, he looked really rough at first, but then
minus the first by the
end of the best of seven.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, he did his job in the end. So I like Eska.
He wasn't even originally supposed to play this season, right?
No, exactly. He didn't have. Well, he was saying that he didn't even have confidence in his own play.
Right.
And that's why they had, you know, Tae-jin in there. Tae-jin was like an interesting factor in that team, too, because I thought he wasn't that great personally.
Season one,
but
definitely.
They can kind of play around him in weird ways. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think when Dean and Tae-jin left the team, it was kind of like a weird reason, but it ended up making that team the team that was capable of winning the finals, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Eska was a huge topic, obviously, for, you know, Luna Takai. I think equally was Runner on Runaway being at least a topic as to underperforming or at least being, a factor of possibly the team going down. What are your thoughts on
that? Yeah, I mean, the thing that's weird to me about the grand finals in general was the fact that, like, it's not so much that it came down to Runner versus Eska. It just came down to, like, which one could last the longest. And I think that, like, the two of them were both, I guess, misplaying a decent amount, but like the series were still close, you know. Like, you could make an argument that Runner's ults weren't good the entire series, but Runaway still played fine, and like they still obviously made it a very close thing almost until the end. But that whole, I think what's it called, the open mic, is that what they call it?
Yeah,
watching semifinals one where Kaiser was just losing his mind. I think, like, even saying to, I said to Chanman before the series, I was like, I don't think that this team can go seven games. Like, I think if you get past a certain point, they're just going to mentally fall apart.
That's what a lot of people were saying, you know, after the open mic, and they're a team with a lot of heart, but like you could tell, like you said, in the semifinals, that Runner was really the one like keeping this team together emotionally during the booth. And when you're on that huge final stage, like, you know, Runner's going to be feeling that pressure too. And Runner is just like a fantastic guy. He's like, that guy is such a hero himself for like putting that team together and, mm-hmm. you know, inspiring them to do what they did. And his research for the matchups they had in the playoffs, like they looked so well prepared for every team they play against in the playoffs. And that was Runner. You know, I mean, he's a strategist. He came up with that stuff. So if you combine those two things, like, it's really easy to forgive his, you know, mediocre Lucio play because he brings so much else to the team. But then when you hear about stuff in the finals where, like, you could tell in game two that, like, Cox just totally lost it in, like, the last three games. Like, the guy was just not playing anywhere near the level we saw him play all season long, which is really too bad because Cox, you know, despite having one of the most hard-to-deal-with names on the cast, you know, was really a fun player to watch because he was this great, like, support player DPS hybrid, and they really used him like that, you know, in a lot of like triple DPS stuff too. So it was sad to see him kind of like appear to mentally collapse in the finals, but I think that was a big part of it too, is that it wasn't just Runner, but it was like Cox and, like, you know, everybody's play on that team like dropped one degree from where it was before, and you can't do that in the finals.
Yeah,
those Hanamura games are rough mentally.
The Hanamura game was okay thing. I mean, it's just like they're gonna lose that game, right? But it was the next, is the last two games that were just like, wow, this is a complete different team that's playing right now. And, you know, and Luna Takai is actually building momentum and getting more confident. So it was kind of a crazy ending at the end. But, but poor Bumper, you know, I was talking to Flame a little bit about this. Poor Bumper, man. I felt like he died first in almost every single battle because they were focused on him so much.
You mean Runner?
No, it was Runner and Bumper. It was both of them. It's like, I felt like both of them were dying, like,
well,
super
early. Well, if Eska didn't get picked, then Luna Takai would be able to kill off Runner, generally, and Bumper. But Bumper's had a tough time, right? Because he's had to, first he like couldn't really play the D.Va because she wasn't really great. And then they like fixed it so that projectiles get absorbed immediately. And then he could play D.Va again, which is his better hero. And then he became like the best Roadhog player on the team. But then that made them like swap Zarya duty really weirdly, where they had like three players that were equally sharing Zarya time. So I think Bumper did his best to be like the Swiss Army knife of that team. Mm-hmm. So I like Bumper. I think he did a great job in the circumstances he was put in.
Yeah.
Well, right now in all regions, dive comps really are kind of dominating. And we saw that again in this best of seven as well. Obviously, there was Reinhardt's here and there, but for the mm-hmm. most part, you're seeing a lot of compositions based around Genjis, around Tracers, around Winston. So I feel like this may have been one of the grand finals that we saw the least Roadhog, like, ever. Like, very, very little Roadhog actually ended mm-hmm. up getting played here because these teams are focusing on these single-target dive comps. We actually... important to note also that this is running on a previous patch, so we could potentially see Pharah come into the dive comps a little bit more, but I think maybe just interesting to talk about the general trends we saw in the meta throughout the grand finals and how much it was relying on that Genji play, that Tracer play, even when you are, sometimes running triple DPS, but primarily actually, you know, running this D.Va Winston composition for dive as well. On, you know, both attack and defense, which is a trend we've been seeing more as over time. Was this a surprise to you, or you probably knew that this was coming, Doa?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, especially if you look at the last time these two teams matched up, you knew that it was going to be a lot of dive comps with Tracer Genji as the DPS on both sides. And, you know, we saw a lot of that in the finals too. But it's unfortunate because although Runaway, I think, is good at playing the dive, they lose a lot when they can't have Kaiser on Reinhardt. Yes. And, you know, we saw him towards the end of the season have to spend a lot of time on Winston. And, you know, he's a fine Winston player, but he's definitely not Miro. And his Reinhardt is so good that you kind of, like, shed a tear every time he has to, you know, play a different tank. So, you know, they're good at the dive, but I think the way the meta was kind of shifting limited them in that they had a lot of other good, like, triple tank stuff and Reinhardt-oriented, you know, 2-2-2 stuff that they liked to run, but they couldn't really run against a team like Lunatic High, especially because a lot of their game plan was trying to get back and kill Jaehong, mm-hmm. Which was a big part of what helped them win that previous playoff match. So it was a tough spot for Runaway to be in.
There were a few moments they were trying to force, you know, a comp where Kaiser could play Reinhardt, and it's just like Eska just living. It was just impossible to deal with the Tracer just killing Reinhardt standing there, basically, right? But why don't we talk about just, I mean, you mentioned the Genji play, right? We have two of the best Genjis going at each other, and I kind of feel like they nullified each other, but then when you look at the stats, who are you stats were, like, outrageous. I mean, they were actually way better than Hoxhulls in terms of kills and death, just the kill death ratio. So I don't know, any thoughts on that, any of you guys?
Did someone actually aggregate the mm-hmm. kills and deaths and stuff
yeah,
like that?
Somebody posted it the next day.
I saw some of that on Reddit or something like that.
Yeah. It was like,
I saw the Twitch analysis too.
The Twitch analysis? Yeah, it was like 50% more. Like I think he had like 40 or 50% more kills, and it was like, really?
A lot
like,
of that was the last two maps, though, I think.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, and then you have to look at it, too. I think when they beat Lunatic High, and what was it, the round of eight? Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure Hoxhulls was like the game of his life, like the entire series. Like, I remember watching Oasis, and he would just consistently kill Jaehong and Eska by himself. And, I mean, the camera was never on him, but you would just always see him in the kill feed. And there was, like,
that was
weird...
That was one big difference that I noticed too is that Hoxall, like you mentioned, did a much better job of getting into the backline and killing the supports in the mm-hmm. quarterfinals than he was able to do in the finals. I think they were really prepared for him this time. Like, Jaehong just like played out of his mind.
And Eska actually, like, you could see the shift in playstyle as like the series went on. I mean, I don't know how much of the VODs you went back and watched, but Eska stops playing like questionably or whatever because he just starts sitting on top of Jaehong for the entire last three maps. Like, he was pretty much babysitting and making sure Stitch wasn't having the game of his life.
Yeah, they can take
and that
him.
Just pretty much allowed who is it? Who are you? And oh my god, why is his name slipping my
Zumba?
Zumba, yeah. Zumba and Miro were just diving Cox and Runner the entire game while Eska's just sitting there babysitting Jaehong, and Jaehong's like a one-man army, so It was definitely cool to see.
Well, they're a team that if you look at these guys too, they've got the way they play down to like polished down to such an efficient level that they can make those little shifts and make it look really good. Like if you look at their stats, they're actually, and I talked about this on the cast too, they're actually one of the teams that holds onto their ultimates the longest before using them, mm-hmm. which was kind of surprising to me at first. But then I went back and watched their play, and they just are so polished in what they do that they will never use ultimates unless they really, you know, have the situation that they're comfortable with using those in. And so if you translate that to, you know, like moving Escobac and all that, they can make those little shifts and then everybody still knows what their job is and can still kind of execute that lunatic high strategy.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that I want to mention too is just Toby. Like, Toby kind of gets ignored in all this, but Toby had a fantastic series. I mean, I forget which map it was. Was it the fifth map? There were like two maps. It was like I think it was Hanamura and Route 66. There were two maps. When there was at one point, Toby was like the last person to live, and they were like in a delaying scenario, stalling, and they just could not kill Toby. Like, Toby stayed alive for, I don't know, a good 10, 15 seconds, and not to mention his ultimates. His ultimates were just amazing the entire time.
Well, Toby and Chris from Meta Athena are my two favorite Lucios of the tournament by far, because they're so good at using their right clicks to just dislodge people in situations where they need to get not just get environmental kills, but just to get somebody off the high ground that they need to, or, you know, like somebody's setting up for something and they just boop them out of the way. Like, they're so good at repositioning enemies on Lucio that it's really kind of a fun thing to watch if you kind of are keeping an eye out for it.
Yeah, it's rough to be like a pro Lucio player because it there's so much subtlety that goes into the aspects that make Lucio so good. Did you drop the sound barrier 1 second earlier than you should have, or did you hold on to the last possible second before dropping it? Did you switch to speed boost to get your Reinhardt just out of the swinging range of the enemy Reinhardt? These tiny little subtle plays are actually like everything for Lucio. So it's difficult to, you know, unless you're watching insanely closely and you're, you know, a super high level player, it's actually difficult to call these moments out, but I totally agree. Toby definitely outplayed Runner.
There's no question about that, but
I've played quite a bit of Lucio myself. So I guess I'm kind of like, I usually when I watch a game, I'm keeping an eye on the supports a little bit more than the other players, just because, like, you know, that's the role I play. So it's fun to kind of watch for that little stuff. But Chris especially, like, Toby was good, but as far as like best Lucios in the tournament, my vote goes to Chris, I think.
All right. Good. And
now we've got a Super Lucio in the patch that just hit.
Super, you know, right?
Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness.
I gotta go back and play some Lucio now.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not quite like beta Juggernaut Lucio, but, you know.
He's getting there. I feel like they just keep putting back things that they took away over time. So who knows, man? And by the end of the year, he could be back to that.
Time to up Zenyatta damage again. Let's do it. Yeah.
right. So, all right, let's pick MVPs for the season. Who would you pick for your MVP?
Oh, that's tough.
Yeah.
Every member of the team is like, they have...
I want to pick Jaehong for finals.
That's a solid choice.
Yeah, he had definitely finals MVP.
Plays. Oh my goodness.
He got robbed because they gave it to Who Are You? But in my opinion, Jaehong was the MVP of the finals and probably the MVP of the tournament in my mind as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I've never seen anybody get out of 2-on-1s more than Jaehong does. It is mind blowing. Like, how did you do that?
The guy's such a great duelist, as well as everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Flame, who would you pick? What do you think?
I don't know. It's hard to say because, like, you look at the season and then you look at the finals. You know, it's like some players just didn't make it all the way, but they had, like, great showings, I think, throughout
that's true.
Tournament. But I don't know. Obviously, Jaehong, I think, is the answer. Maybe you could say Runner, but Runner's play was not good. But from a team perspective, he was probably the MVP of the most... He did the most, you know, like, he took a team from nothing, got them all the way to the grand finals, coached them, like, kept them calm and all this other stuff. And
I think you can include players that were just impactful rather than just a lot of flash plays. So Runner would definitely be one of the top five for the season in my list too. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, clearly Runner is an amazing coach. You know, like, really the question is just whether he's a player, you know, and I think that's the biggest thing people are asking.
Well, it's hard to do both, too.
Like, you're not supposed to do both.
No, I mean, like, when you're in game two, it's like, if you're focusing on a lot of things, which, I mean, he clearly is, and he has to do, like, I'm not going to say names, but, like, when you consider the fact that some of your players might get a little too emotional And that's something that you have to like constantly be weary of and dealing with. It makes your job as Lucio definitely a lot harder. Like your focus maybe mm-hmm. gets a little more.
Yeah.
Tainted.
I think, you know, other players who'd be in the top five, at least for me, would be like Rascal from Kung Du Panthera.
Ooh, yeah.
Yes. And like Saya player from Meta-Athena again, too.
I felt like Sabioli had some crazy, crazy games.
Yeah, he did. At the end, too. Sure. In the playoffs? Oh, my God. Yeah, he carried that team, even though they lost.
Too bad Luna just totally dropped off the face of the earth during that series. Like, worst nano boost I've ever seen from that
guy. It was three games in a row, too. I don't know what happened. Yeah.
It was like the entire playoffs.
Yeah, he was. He was missing badly. Yeah.
Too much pressure.
Yeah, it was too much pressure.
I was going to give an honorable shout out to Flower just because his aim is something beautiful.
Hanzo, baby.
It's absurd. just seeing the way that he tracks, it's among the best that I've ever seen in any FPS. I got to agree with Ricci.
Libero is one of mine, too.
Yeah, Libero, definitely. He's up there for me. That guy can play any hero well.
Mm-hmm.
How much poaching goes on between seasons? Like, do you expect there to be some team swap-ups where, like, more super teams come out? Or how does that work over there?
I don't really know
the contract situation.
I mean, the contract situation in Korea, I think, right now for Overwatch is pretty fluid. So I don't know if it's so much poaching as just kind of, like, players being free to sort of move around more than in other sort of esports situations. So it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot. There was less movement, I think, this season than I was expecting. I think everybody was expecting Zumba to go to Lunatic High just because he played so well with those guys at the World Cup, and it just made sense. So him being on Lunatic High just feels natural. But some of the other movement, like between Kongdu Panther and Kongdu Unsia, obviously that's, you know, within the same organization, but, you know, a lot of that made sense. But I'm more curious about the movement after this season, because we've got like legitimately a lot of good players out there now. And, you know, with the contract situation, like I said, I think being kind of fluid in Korea, you know, where will a lot of these guys end up?
Will they end up on Cloud9?
Well, Cloud9 picked up.
I'm waiting for a super team. You know, like I want like Lunatic High, but like getting like a seventh man Libero. Like, how scary does that sound?
I don't want to see a super team. Like that's like exactly what I don't want to see. Like we've been seeing that in things like the NBA, and it's just like causing the most boring regular seasons I've ever seen. So like I definitely like the parody that's been going on, but you know, definitely, you know, Runaway. You know, Runner had that interview, right? And Runner made it sound like There was definitely a question whether the team was going to stay together or not, you know, right after the finals. Literally the day after the finals, those questions were coming up. And, yeah, it really makes you think if, you know, any of these teams are really that stable right now. Outside of maybe Lunatic High. Lunatic High seems pretty solid right now from an organization standpoint.
I don't know how it is in Korea, but if Apex were in NA, like if that were an NA tournament and mm-hmm. some unsigned team made it all the way to the grand finals of that, I feel like mm-hmm. they would have had a sponsor by the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if there's like some weird rules against that. Like if you're not allowed to pick up a team that's already like changed names or something midway through an Apex, there's probably some reason why you can't do that.
Yeah. But you probably, yeah.
If this was an NA, they would have been like picked up midway through the tournament. Like, oh, this team's doing good. Like that's how NA works. Like, oh, this team's doing good. Let's pick them up.
I think right now, a lot of the Korean sponsors and stuff are waiting to see what happens with Overwatch League before they pick up a lot of teams. And so that's why we're not seeing a lot of big sponsors come in at the moment. That's only like my guess, but mm-hmm. seems likely. I think I was echoing, so I put on my lovely Overwatch.
Thanks
headset.
For doing that, man.
No problem.
So viewers, go ahead.
I mean, I was kind of just joking about the Cloud9 thing, but Cloud9, we'll get to this later in the show. They picked up a couple of Korean players. Does this mean that is this the beginning of the mass? I don't know. Well, we already see so many Western teams just pick up players from Europe, from America, from different countries, speaking different languages. I wouldn't be surprised if this is a sign of things to come. Obviously, right now, OGN is kind of the biggest, most important tournament out there in terms of prize pool, in terms of skill, frankly. But you know, once OW League comes out, we're going to see a lot more Korean players shift over, or I think just mixed teams in general.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yep, I wouldn't be either. But speaking, you know, Cloud9, you know, I feel like we're going to talk about the news and say, but they just, I guess, leading into it a little bit is that, you know, they picked up two Korean players as well as Bishop, you know, as their coach. And, but a lot of people already knew about Bishop. But, you know, these aren't big name players. I mean, these are players that have potential that are good. You know, they are Korean. They were on the smaller teams or less well-known teams. You think if they wanted to poach, they would poach bigger name players, right?
I think it's tough to get some of those guys right now because in Korea, it's not just like the money that's the issue. It's loyalty is like a really, really big thing in Korean culture, whether it's like loyalty to your company or your friends and all that. So a lot of players just like definitely wouldn't leave in the middle of the season and then just like may have a tough time leaving their, you know, friends anyway after that. So
yeah,
I'm not super surprised that it's not like huge name players going to C9, but it's cool they picked up Bishop. Bishop is a great guy.
Yeah, he definitely had impact. I mean, you could tell. Well. You could tell even just with their play towards the end of the season that Bishop was having an impact. So,
well, he lived in Minnesota for a while too. So
yeah, he speaks great English.
His English is flawless.
I know actually. It is. It's like it's an American. I mean, basically.
The first time Monty and I met him, it was so funny because he like because he was playing on Kongdu Panthera at the time. So he like comes up to the caster booth before the show and yeah, you know, we'd have like players come and say hi, you know, sometimes and they're like, oh hi, I'm a big fan, you know, I like English cast, you know. But he like walks up and is like, hey guys, how's it going? I'm Bishop, you know, from Kongdu Panthera. Like I mean, it just that does not happen very often where you have Korean players with just English that's that good.
Yeah. How funny would it have been if he had a recording of somebody saying that and he was just mouthing it. He's just trying to freak you guys out. No, that's definitely
really... ventriloquist or something.
Yeah, ventriloquist, exactly. But then we were talking about the viewership for Apex, at least the finals, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was really good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, something we've kind of lamented on the show over the last couple of months is we've had all these sort of medium-tier tournaments over and over again in the West. And no single tournament really has gotten more than 20 to 25,000 concurrent viewers for the finals, which is a really far cry from some of the tournaments we had towards the end of last year and leading into this year. But then here comes OGN. Obviously, this is a super hype finals, and it goes to the seventh game, which, believe it or not, that makes an incredibly huge impact. Esports finals, it always just ramps up continuously during the entire grand finals until the very, very end. So the fact that it was seven games, you know, two great storylines going into it definitely helped with viewership for the Western viewers. But what I was actually particularly surprised by was the Korean viewership on Twitch. Disclaimer, I work for Twitch, so I specifically look at Twitch numbers a lot.
Every day.
But I have not seen Korean viewership like this on Twitch ever before outside of Worlds. League of Legends Worlds is literally the only event I have ever seen on the Twitch platform get even close to this number. I think it was 47,000 on the Korean stream, 47,000 concurrents, and about 33,000 on the English stream at max. So you're talking in total over 80,000 viewers.
That's not including China, too. China had a ton, too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. China had viewers. And then obviously over out in Korea, Doa, you've guys got TV channels, all kinds of different ways to watch it. So that's way less than the total viewership. But just looking at Twitch, that is actually damn impressive and really exciting for me as an Overwatch fan.
Twitch has been getting a lot more popular in Korea lately in general, it seems like. It seems like the team that Twitch has in Korea has been doing a really good job of sort of moving people over to that platform. And so that's maybe part of it, too. But and I'm sure the TV viewership for the finals is insane, too. Like, I don't know numbers or anything like that, but I've heard that TV viewership on OGN for Overwatch has been like really, really good this season, which is great. But the game is just so big here. Like everybody likes to, you know, use the PC bound rankings as like a litmus test. And I personally thought that it would get up to like league level and then they would sort of swap places pretty consistently, which is what we're seeing now finally. You know, but some people are like, whenever League goes a little bit above Overwatch and PC Bang rankings, I always get like tweets or like, why don't you tweet about it now? League's LOL, dead game. Guys, like, the rank season just ended. What do you expect?
I know, of course,
these games, like, League is still insanely popular here. So, of course, you know, it's going to just like, I think those two are going to share the top spot, you know, and go back and forth every week or two for the foreseeable future. But yeah, viewership for Apex across the board has been so good this season. Mm-hmm. And it really gives me a lot of hope, you know, I mean, not just for Overwatch in Korea, but kind of for Overwatch everywhere, really, and shows what like a good production can do. OGN does a fantastic job, and I think it shows in viewership.
Yeah, for me, this is one of the big storylines outside of the gameplay itself, was simply how hype it was, how hype the audience was, how many viewers were tuned in online. Every single time the camera was on Eska, or he even like tickled somebody with a tracer bullet, it was just like thousands of fangirls just ripping their panties off, like,
dude, that's the craziest thing. Is like, I've never heard. Well, first of all, the Apex finals were the loudest live audience I have ever heard.
Really?
In my entire 5 years of Korea. Yeah. And this includes like
the big war finals. Yeah.
This includes LOL World Champs, honestly,
with 40,000 people in the audience. Yeah,
but like just in terms of the intensity of the cheering and stuff, I've never heard anything like it.
It was insane.
It was insane. But at the same time, what has been kind of surprising to me too is just like the K-pop boy band status that Overwatch teams have here in a way that I've never seen before. Like, you know, before StarCraft, like maybe like 70% guys, 30% girls, you know, maybe 60-40 sometimes. League was like 50-50, but Overwatch is like, no joke, 80-85% girls and like 20% guys in the audience.
That is insane.
Every week.
They're
so fanatical and they love these guys and they make them all sorts of gifts and all that. I mean, you've seen some of the stuff they made, you know, some of the global players, like they made like 3D printed like statues of them and cakes of them on there and stuff and like costumes for them. And it's so it really is like these teams in Korea now are getting this like K-pop idol status that you've seen some of that kind of thing in StarCraft 1 and in League and stuff, but I've never seen it be as crazy as it has been in Overwatch. It's like, it's on another level. It's cool. Rather frightening, to be honest.
Really? I mean, I think it's
it
good.
Gets a bit creepy sometimes.
That's some your fanaticism. New goal though, dude, to bring it all over to NA. Get that same feel, you know?
I don't know.
It wants to get the same fan base, figure out what they're doing different. And
if we could achieve that over here,
that would be amazing. It was like 95-5.
95-5, guys.
Maybe 90-10. Like,
exactly.
It's weird when you have an esports finals where there's like a big line for the girls' bathroom, but the guys can just like go in, you know. But it's like the fanaticism is crazy. Like I know there was a global team that was here, and like some fangirls wanted to give them a gift and wanted to like send it, you know, to them via, because they couldn't like get close to the players. Mm-hmm. And so one of the fangirls like accidentally left her purse in the box of gifts. And then so you're like, oh, I left my purse, I have to go get it now. And then like got back and got to meet the players. I know, it's like
it was Cruz. I think it was like Cruz or it was Reunited.
I can't remember who the story was with that, but
it was one of the Reunited players.
I wouldn't be surprised. Cruz is like mega famous in Korea now.
So are the Western players more famous than the, or are they just generally
not more than Eska?
Yeah, not more than Eska. Yeah. I mean, Lunatic High is a different level, but. Yeah,
some of the Western players are very popular. Like, you know, they love Cruz, they love Mendo, they love Taimu, you know, they love Coco. Like, they love Coco. Basically like everybody on it. Yeah. Like, you get those great like Coco signs where they have just like the very like neutral face emote and all that on it. So they do, but the fanaticism for like Lunatic High and like Meta Athena and Runaway and stuff like that is LW Blue is a bit higher, I'd say.
Okay. All right, well, let's ask one last big question, which is, and be bold with this answer, guys. So, how far behind are Western teams, right, from the same, like, I mean, we were talking about them, like, Korean teams catching up about, what, 6 months ago, right? And now I have to ask the question, how far behind are the Western teams? And, you know, we are seeing signs of, you know, basically Overwatch esports, or at least the top, you know, tiered Overwatch esports, starting to revolve around Korea. You know, it's starting to take orbit around Korea already.
I want to answer this last.
Okay, answer this last. And my question is, are we seeing the beginnings of teams having to go over there and do, you know, 2-month, 3-month boot camps, you know, scrimming, playing on the ladder and things like that to improve, instead of being able to play at home and growing it in their home regions. Who wants to go first?
I think Flame should go first.
All right.
Flame. I mean, my answer is like a big fat no, because okay. I mean, at least to the going over there thing, I'm pretty sure the biggest, I mean, this is like a, I don't want to get too political here, but when you get into it, it's very hard, I think, for an NA team right now to feel motivated. And I think before this year started, like, you had MLG, you had the Overwatch Open, you had the ESL thing. And a lot of the NA and Western players, like, had a lot to play for, I think it felt like. They had big prize pools, they had lands, they had travel. And I think MLG had very high level of gameplay when it comes down to, like, how FaZe played on LAN, how Fnatic played. Complexity had a really good showing at that tournament. Obviously, Envy came in and won, but since then, there hasn't been much. And due to the lack of lands, I feel like the level of play is starting to, like, taper down, because even some of the big-name sponsored orgs aren't even competing in some of these tournaments. Like, have Immortals winning two tournaments in a row, and then there's no, like, half of the top teams that were at MLG just aren't in that tournament, in either of those tournaments. And then now you have Overwatch Pit again online, you have FaZe with half their team in Europe, you have, like, all these weird little factors, because nobody's really giving it 100%. A lot of players are still streaming a lot, they're still working, some of them are still in high school even, but the prize pool is not there, the lands aren't there, the big feeling of, like, accomplishment when you win isn't there. And I think that it's, like, slowing NA and the Western teams down. I mean, obviously, some teams are putting in a lot more work. I think Rogue is an obvious candidate for that. You have Selfless, who's playing really well. But I think some of the other teams are feeling a little bit, like, the pressure just feels less and the reward feels less. So I think that they'll eventually catch up. But I don't think that the level of play across the entirety of the Korean, or the entirety of Apex Season 2, was that good. I think that there's, like, an alternate universe where C9 could have gotten out of their group, where
they almost
maybe
did.
Envious plays a little differently in their elimination match and gets the playoffs. And the level of Overwatch isn't, like, super, super, super good, but there's definitely, like, I would say the top six of Korea are probably at, like, there's probably, like, one, maybe two teams in the West that can compete with them at the moment.
Okay. Ben, what do you think?
I agree with Flame for a couple reasons. It's really hard to answer this question because we actually haven't even had a tournament with all the top teams since Overwatch Open. Really, you could argue MLG was pretty close, even though it was just NA teams. It was the cream of the crop of NA, but you're still missing out on all of the European teams at the most recent major, which was back in January. It's already April. So we haven't even had an opportunity to see how Envious stacks up against the teams in NA right now. They were in Korea for so long, they haven't played in any tournaments since they got knocked out of OGN. So we don't even have a frame of reference anymore. Obviously, the play styles are pretty different, particularly because OGN was on a different patch. So, you know, the NA teams have been playing a lot of Pharah Mercy, and we'll see how Korea adapts to that, or if they have a composition that can totally whip that. Like, it's really, really, really hard to know how teams are going to stack up. Because even within the West, it's hard to say who's the best. Because Envious hasn't played, NRG hasn't played, the European teams are scattered, some of them are in NA, some of them are half in NA, half not. So simply the lack of, maybe it's a lack of motivation because there's not a big prize pool, or maybe it's simply the fact that we haven't had a chance to see these teams play, like all the top talent play. It makes this a difficult one to judge. And I don't want to jump out to any conclusion and say that Korea is crazy better than the West. Yes, we did see some of our best teams lose this season of OGN. Envious went down. Cloud9 went down when they were looking really, really good. But I think we're still on relatively even footing. And it's going to continue to... I think it's going to be even going into the future as well, because the Western scene is so big. There are so many talented players spread across well over a dozen teams that you could consider, like, high tier, like, very good teams.
Whereas you look at StarCraft, you look at League of Legends, and yeah, of course there were a lot of players and a lot of teams, but I feel like the scenes in the West are pretty strong still, and it's only going to get stronger as supposedly all the EU teams are going to move to NA. So you're going to have everyone here more or less in the not too distant future. Actually, just in a couple of months. So I think because like the way OW League is going to be is structured and all that, it's going to even out a bit. Maybe Korea's ahead a little bit at this point, but it's just impossible to like really say with certainty who, like how far ahead they are. All right. Anyway, that's my take.
Let me add my little take before Doa gets on, and he just gets to be like the ultimate judge or whatever.
The final word.
Yeah. So I'm going to take the opposite approach. I'm going to say that if it wasn't for OWL or just Overwatch League and how it's structured, you know, breaking up the regions and that sort of thing, having, you know, just their own teams in different regions and forcing you to stay in your region to some extent, I think that if that wasn't happening, then I my feelings, just from what I'm seeing and what I'm feeling and just hearing that there's uncertainty in the West and the players aren't doing this because of this or lack of motivation because of this. And those are things I've heard before, you know what I mean? And I feel like the direction would be starting to create an epicenter over in Korea again. But because of how the Overwatch League is structured, I think that if that does happen, it's going to happen at a very, very slow rate, or at least a much slower rate, which is good. I mean, because my heart wants, you know, the Western teams to be able to compete at the highest level. But I feel like it's headed that direction. It's going to head that direction until the league starts. It's going to continue to grow. At least the gap will grow. All right, Doa, what do you think?
Well, I mean, it's interesting for me because now Twitch chat will finally be right, and I will be truly an NA caster. So it's it's gonna get there. But I think right now, I know I had to. I'm sorry.
It's good.
I love Twitch chat, but we're in a weird situation, right? Like worldwide for Overwatch, it's a weird situation where there's not a lot of stuff going on in America and Europe. Like Apex really is kind of like the only game in town right now for like big LAN tournaments. And then you've got the other factor too, where they have a tournament realm, right? So they're able to sort of regulate when the patches come out. And so we don't have these weird situations where you have like a patch drop between the two semifinal games. You know, nobody wants that, right? That's not fair to the players. So it's good to have this, but it does kind of put everything in a weird spot where like Korea looks really good, but they're on like a different meta kind of than everybody else. And, you know, again, you have the Western teams coming out and competing, and they theoretically get very good practice here. But at the same time, it is hard to be away from home for that long. And, you know, I heard a lot of players talking about this before they left Korea, that, you know, they like coming, they like playing, and they love the practice that they get here. But it's just hard to live in even a nice hotel, you know, for like 2 months at a time. And I get that. It'd be hard for anybody, you know. You know, then you go back to the NA side, and yeah, there's online tournaments. People are kind of like waiting to see what happens with Overwatch League. So I think right now you have to kind of say, yeah, a lot of the top Korean teams are probably getting better practice right now and like maybe tighter strategically. But I think it's really impossible to say at the moment, you know, who the better region is, because the circumstances just aren't there to accurately judge that, right? You'd have to have teams that had, you know, the same sort of practice opportunities, the same, you know, patch to play on, basically. So I think we're just gonna have to wait, frankly. You know, I think we're gonna have to wait for the next big international competition, whether that's, you know, Korean teams going to NA to play in Overwatch League or something else pops up, you know, in the meantime. Because yeah, right now, you know, of course the Korean teams are gonna be better because they're the ones, you know, playing the most, right? And they're the ones who have the most competition right now. But I don't know if that's necessarily a reason to say that, like, the West needs to catch up to Korea, because, like, how can they right now, you know? So it's just, my take on it is that it's just a weird situation. We're just going to have to wait, you know, till later this year to really see who's better after everybody kind of gets on the same page patch-wise and gets to start scrimming again.
This is all connected to exactly what we're talking about, the fact that the scene is just stronger in Korea right now in terms of the big tournament We have it's been so split, so disparate in the West. But the other thing I was going to mention is like the Korean teams, but also the Korean fans. The Korean fans are destroying American and Western.
That snowballs
fans
though, right now. But that snowballs.
Who, you know, I mean, the American fans have same to cheer for at the moment. That's the thing, you know.
No, but
they don't really have the events to go and cheer at.
Exactly. Yeah,
and I didn't even think about what you just said too about the tournament realm. Like in Overwatch terms, an extra month on a patch is actually like insane.
Yeah,
in the current state of the game, I feel like even today there was a patch that dropped midway between like the semis and the quarters of Overwatch Pit, and you suddenly you're just playing a match that you actually only had 2 hours of practice time and like a massive meta shift.
In the future, I think a lot of teams are going to be able to, you know, have access to a tournament realm and like not have to deal with that kind of stuff. Cause no tournament or player should have to deal with suddenly playing an important match on a patch they've had no experience with, you know, and OGN and talked to Blizzard enough and they're like, hey, could you really just give us this so this type of thing doesn't happen? And Blizzard was nice enough to, you know, work with OGN and provide that. So later in the year, I'm sure once there's more bigger things rolling, we're going to see that worldwide, but yeah, it does make a big difference. It does just straight up make better competition, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, okay. Well, I think at this point, you're going to let Doa go here so we can talk some Overwatch Pit. But man, fantastic having you on, buddy.
Yeah. I'd love to stay in chat, but yeah, just with all the Apex stuff and my impending international move and all this crazy stuff, I have not had time to catch a lot of those VODs. So wouldn't have a lot to add.
When do you move? Which day? How long from now?
I'm flying out on May 1st.
Okay,
that's what I'm going.
Couple of weeks left.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right. I'm gonna be relaxing on a Jeju Island to the south of South Korea with my wife for a week next week.
Nice.
And then 1 week of packing, getting rid of stuff I don't want to bring with me, and then that's that. So,
and you're gonna end up in Irvine? Do you know yet?
Yeah, we're gonna be in Irvine initially because, you know, we want to be close to Blizzard HQ. Makes sense because we're gonna be, you know, consulting with them on the league and stuff. So no pressure, right?
Yeah, no pressure at all. That means any changes you want, guys, go tell Doa and he'll directly tell the.
I'll see what I can do.
Exactly.
I was an inside man now.
All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with some more talk about the new event as well as Overwatch Pit. All right, see you in a second. All right.
I'm sure that there would have been a thread about it.
And we're midstream into playoffs right now. And we got the winners of the final brackets, I think, for each region already set. So let's just kind of go over it really, really quickly here. Let me bring it up. Let's bring up EU first. And EU's got some crazy results, guys. We got
EU's very confusing to me.
Huge upsets. Huge upsets in the upper bracket, at least. We've got Movistar Riders beating NIP 2-0, and then E-United beating Misfits 2-0 also to move on into the upper bracket finals. So that leaves Misfits against Singularity in the losers bracket, and then I think Dignitas and Laser Kitten still have to play, and then NIP plays the winner of that. So let's talk about this, guys. All right, last week we talked, you know, I think I mentioned that I felt like Misfits was, you know, playing to the competition that they were playing against, you know, like to the level of competition they were playing against, and, you know, haven't looked good, you know, up to date, at least not in the few weeks leading up to this current week. And then now we got E-United actually beating them. I mean, E-United played well too, but Misfits losing is huge news because they're huge favorites in this entire tournament. So what are your thoughts?
That one was a huge surprise to me. Movistar Riders was also a huge surprise. Misfits, frankly, they just haven't lived up to what I personally expected, what pretty much the entire community expected they would be able to accomplish by this point. I mean, it's not like, okay, look, this is a relatively new roster. It's only been this very specific roster for a couple of months. They're switching roles around, so things are going to settle into place over time. But it's not like this is brand new, and it's not like they haven't put in the time or effort. This team was in Korea boot camping, scrimming all day, practicing all day. I know how hard working these guys are, how much they want to win. I'm very surprised to see them going down and not being in the winner's bracket here. To me, just watching them play, it seems like they've struggled to adapt to the meta. They have the talent to play basically any meta that they want, but it seems like they're slightly reluctant to play the Tracers, play the Pharah Mercies, like these things that we're seeing from a lot of the other Western teams. But yeah, big surprise. And I won't lie, I'm a bit of a Tevic fanboy, so I'm like a little sad. I hope that they can pull it together.
Blame?
I mean, I guess I'm in the same boat. It's just that team, I feel like they make too many changes. Like they keep like shuffling players' roles like between Korea and even now they've made role changes. And I guess that's only been a few weeks or a month or so. So it's not super like shocking that they would be having troubles. I mean, EU United has been playing together for a while. That the core of that team has stuck together through thick and thin. So
yep.
Them losing to EU United, I don't think is a big scare or anything for them. But I would say that they're not performing up to what you would think that they were going to. But I think a lot of that has to do, again, with them swapping. Like, Zebosai is now a healer, and Nevix is on DPS. And Tevic had so much experience playing with Zebosai on DPS and Nevix healing. And now it's like that whole dynamic is very, very different now. And I'm not sure if that's adversely affecting them or how long it's going to take for them to get over that. But I think that they're not comfortable. There's obviously some issues within the team if they're feeling like, oh, maybe we should make changes. Like instead of going for lateral changes or swapping a player, they're just swapping roles. And I think sometimes that hurts players or that hurts mentalities or like, this player might be better. This guy thinks he's better than me at this, or I might be not as good as I thought I was at that. And it's just a weird spot to be in, I think. I think like it's a very talented roster, but maybe they would all be better if there was like some weird 5 DPS meta.
Yeah, you know? I mean, like, that's what I was going to say. Like, is it a meta issue right now? Just dive comp is just terrible for them?
No, I think it's more
than
just...
It shouldn't
be. Yeah, that's what I mean.
It shouldn't be, right? They have the right people, at least in their past, you know, their past teams and what they've played, right? So it's very, very shocking. And I don't know. Well, maybe it could have been just, I don't know, a bad day. They're obviously still in the lower brackets, but they can fight their way all the way back up. But even just losing 2-0 to United is surprising. You know, it wouldn't have been as bad if they would have just, you know, got a game out of it and it was like really, really close for the other ones. But yeah, it was kind of surprising it was that much. And then Movie Star Riders, I mean, these guys have been super hot lately, and maybe just super hot this past week.
Yeah,
it's mostly this week.
I was actually going to say against quite literally the opposite.
Yeah,
I'm looking at Movie Star Riders on Liquipedia, Chris.
Yeah, yeah.
And their claim to fame was winning a Gopher Overwatch Europe Cup number 41 for $163.
Yes, yes.
That is like their best showing ever.
So the question is, what happened to Nip then? What the heck happened to Nip then? You know, I guess is really the question.
That team, Movie Star Riders isn't new though. They're not like
they've been around since.
But I feel like I watched them recently. Outside of maybe it was that tournament that you're mentioning, but I think recently they've been putting up pretty decent performances. Like this wasn't an upset, but this wasn't like a oh my god, these guys came out of nowhere and beat Nip. It's like, oh, they had a really good day.
Their group, I think they did well in groups, didn't they? They did well.
They're a good team. They're not it's not like they're not sponsored, obviously, or maybe that is a sponsor. I don't think so, but they're being that like they're kind of like in that same boat that I think Hammers was in, like Chavs. Maybe? Like they were kind of like another Chavs level team ish, maybe a little bit lower. But NIP again, like where have you seen NIP recently? Like when was the last time we saw NIP play? Even like this tournament might be the first time that we've seen them. They were kind of adversely affected with Dignitas, I think, and even United in like that list of teams that just never got to play because they were always in Europe. And Europe, like that's the meme, right? That Europe never had tournaments.
Yeah. So we're starting to see the same thing in Europe as we see in NA. You know, some of these teams that were supposed to be on top are getting dethroned this month, this meta, and we might see a shakeup the next time meta changes, which could be like right now with all these.
Could be like 6 hours ago.
Exactly. And Nip, if we're going back to triple tank, Nip's going to be riding on top again soon. So
they might make it to the finals now.
Exactly.
I mean, you don't know, really.
It's just crazy, right? Why don't we talk about NA now? We got a little bit less surprises in it, or just a lot less surprises in NA. We've got Selfless beating Team Liquid 2-1, and Team Liquid looked pretty good in that match, I have to say. They've looked better recently than the last several tournaments. I mean, we talked about them the last few weeks, so I felt like this last week they've looked pretty well, at least the matches I saw. So they took Selfless to 2-1, so Selfless ended advancing, and then Rogue beat CLG 2-0. So it's Selfless versus Rogue. No surprise here. I think a lot of folks were expecting this. This is a rematch from what we saw from the monthly Melee, I believe, right? So, yeah, we'll see if Selfless can get some revenge here on Rogue. But what are your guys' thoughts on semifinals and possible finals matchup here?
Selfless versus Rogue is basically who's the king of NA right now. Both of these teams have been looking pretty dominant in the region. And without the Enviouses and the Cloud9s and the NRGs of the world, I mean, these two teams are basically, they're at the top. So this will be a good match to figure out where the pecking order sits in NA. Of course, you've still got teams like LG Evil, which have been very, very hot recently, but up until the last week or two, now they're kind of taking a nosedive in terms of some of their performance. I'm really excited for this match. It's it'll actually take place, I think, a little bit after the airing of this episode, because we're recording this a little bit early. So it should be taking place, if you're listening to this on Thursday, in a couple of hours. So that's going to be a great one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what about you, Flame? What do you think?
I mean, Patch, right? Like, that's kind of, that's like the overlooming dark cloud.
Why do we have to say
that? That's like the smoke screen, you know, like you throw the smoke and then, like, you don't really know who's going to come out of it. I mean, Rogue has been playing almost pretty one-dimensionally, I would say, throughout the entirety of their showing, like, Nox on the Winston, Soon on the Tracer. It's been a staple. A few deviations here and there. And I think Selfless kind of the same thing. Sinatra on the Tracer, sometimes Sinatra on the Genji, Defrain on the 76, or some on Pharah a little bit. Point being, though, like some of these heroes are just going to fall off, potentially, depending on how this whole thing shifts out. I saw FaZe today run a Torbjorn on defense on Route 66 with huge success. I wonder how much of that had to do with the Lucio changes and how there's like a dynamic there now. There's going to be a big shift, I think, at the end of this, just because I don't think people realize how big of a change that like speed thing is. So I would say, I mean, that's going to be good, but I'm really looking out to see Liquid, I think, more before this tournament. Liquid always, like, again, you said Liquid just never really looked convincing. And I think when they picked up Shatter, a lot of people, I mean, including myself, were saying, like, why would you get a streamer? Like, he's never played competitive. Oh,
Shatter's impressing me.
But no, yeah. Like, the whole
starting
past,
to get in there. Mm-hmm.
Like, the past couple of weeks, watching Liquid is like watching Shatter grow up, I think. And even, like, ID, they just played Selfless. Yeah. They almost beat Selfless, actually.
ID played well.
It was almost almost a 2-0 for Liquid against Selfless. So back to that whole, like, Selfless versus Rogue thing, I definitely think Rogue has the upper hand, but Liquid as a team are starting to look really scary individually. I think AZK is starting to come out as like one of those top tracers.
Yep.
When ID has a good game, it's incredible for him. And like Shatter's just been getting better and better every week. So that team is, and they already have like probably the best tank in NA in Mezzer. So that whole team is like, they have a lot of potential. I'm just really curious to see like, and I think they just got a new coach too. I'm like ranting, but all these reasons why Liquid should be getting better, but they're like my dark horse to watch. But I think that there's going to be a lot of swaps in the pecking order at the end of the day, just because of the patch.
Well, they go against LG Evil next, so that'll be good to see how they at least stack up against LG Evil, who's on the way down. That team's on the way down, at least from the standpoint of where they were a month ago. But FaZe Clan CLG in the other matchup in the losers bracket. And then, yeah, we'll see how things work out here. And then in the end, I forget, like the two regions come together, right? The champions from the two regions end up playing in the finals. No, is that?
No,
I forget.
No.
Just two separate tournaments.
Oh, just two separate tournaments. Oh, that's
so
a bummer.
It's actually $30,000.
It's only a bummer. Oh my God.
It ends this week, by the way. It ends on Friday, I think.
Jeez. Why don't they just like have them play each other?
This was the most aggressive schedule ever, I think.
Okay. All right.
It would have been cool if they flew out the winners of each. That would have been neat.
Yeah.
One day.
Okay. Well, we're going to move on. We've got still a few bit of news just to wrap things up. Before we do that, I want to give a shout out to a few of the folks that are listening on iTunes. You can find the overview on any of the podcast apps or on iTunes and Google Podcasts. Just look up Overwatch or look up The Overview and you will find us there. And I want to give a shout out to three folks that left us 5-star reviews and some great comments. X-Rory X, Lunchwagon, and Joe Burr. Those type of ratings and things like that help us greatly in terms of SEO on these different aggregators, for podcasts. So keep up with that. It's been really, really great the last month or two. You guys have been amazing with that and it helps us. So, it doesn't cost any money. It takes like about a minute or two to do it. So if you do listen to us, we'd appreciate it if you do that. All right, let's go with news. So C9 has a lot of things going on right now, or at least a couple big things that were announced. Jack did an article, or at least an interview that Doa mentioned earlier, and brought up a few interesting things. Latest round of funding being one of them, which they got like kind of a couple months ago now, and he alluded to it helping them secure a potential spot in the Overwatch League and really bringing some more names into the ownership of C9, as well as just building a campus, which was pretty cool. Bring in all the sports, all of their players together on a campus and, mention things like psychologists and gyms and, things like that. What did you guys think of the interview?
Pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah.
We talked about the fact that Cloud9 recently raised some capital as well. It's really cool. Like Alexis Ohanian, a Reddit co-founder. Yep. You've got Hunter Pence, who plays for the Giants and is also a gamer, streams on Twitch. All these really big names investing. And Jack basically makes it sound like, at least part of the reason here is to get more funding and brass and business people behind them to help them prepare for Overwatch League specifically, which was pretty interesting to see in that interview. The idea of having a campus is cool, having like a Cloud9 like mega campus that could end up being really cool for them if they can pull it off. I don't think anyone else has actually done anything like that, any other major esports teams. I think the player transfers are also very interesting for Overwatch fans, because this Cloud9 team was looking better and better as time went on. I was a little bit surprised by this, seeing Zephyr, Sally Bishop replace Rib and Mendo have been, I don't know if they've been booted or benched or
benched.
Or, Rib, yeah, just benched.
Yeah, Rib and Mendo benched.
Yeah. It's a pretty interesting move. I've been a Vic fan. I've also been a Mendo fan. Like when he stopped playing competitively for a little while, I was super bummed. Glad to see him join Cloud9, but he wasn't on the team very long, or wasn't a starter, I guess, on the team very long. But Bishop as the coach, he comes from Korea. He knows the Korean scene. He must know something about these players. And I don't know too much myself.
Yeah, me either.
About Zephyr and Selly, but he must know, must have a good reason for this. I'll say that.
Can we talk about Gods on Tank now too? Have you guys seen him play Tank at all?
I mean, he was already playing a lot of Winston in the past. Like Winston's one of his mains. Yeah. So I'm not hugely surprised, especially given how dive comp is so popular right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's mainly going to just be playing Winston, I assume. Or actually, Rib has got kicked. Oh, wow.
I know.
Is he going to be playing Ryan and stuff?
That's what I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, he's the Ryan player now.
Yeah.
I'm not sold. I mean, all right, I'll go back. Jack's interview was fantastic. Like,
yeah,
I've met Jack in real life. He seems like a chill dude, but that interview, I think, if he fulfills, if he follows his dream and gets to where he wants, I think his vision is perfect in some weird way. Like, he was even talking about getting housing for, like, players that were in there, like, at an age where they need their own house,
Wives,
like, to raise families and stuff and, like,
and stuff,
get a gym. Yeah. So, like, honestly, Jack, I'm right here. I'll take it. it's interesting, that whole dynamic. And I like the way that he phrased it too, because I think some of the hinting that was done in that interview was more or less along the lines of, like, you can tell that all of the org owners really want Overwatch League to succeed, but it's not only just from like an Overwatch perspective, it's from like an esports and like, how will this affect, like he was talking about the Dota team and like how this might affect Dota if they see Overwatch League being successful, mm-hmm. and how he thinks that Overwatch League will eventually start influencing the way that the other esports go. So I like the way that whole interview went and like how his vision of what the impacts could be to the rest of esports was. So that was cool. From the team perspective, I mean, I've known for a long time, I guess since Korea, when they were still in Korea, I knew that Mendo was considering, if not already definitively going to leave or bench himself. I think that there was a lot of stress going on. I mean, he's young, so I'll give him benefit of the doubt. It's definitely stressful to move to Korea with a bunch of people that are older than you, that are maybe different mindsets or have different priorities or different ways of doing things. So I think that there was like a weird, I don't know if it was a cultural thing or just like a, maybe they just didn't get along or the team wasn't performing well and he got scapegoated potentially. But I mean, again, they have a coach now. It's the coach's call. It's no one else's, which I agree with, which I like, but we'll see how it works out for them. I mean, they were looking good in Korea, but they haven't played since they came back, and
they're going to play soon.
Yeah, that's kind of the same for every team. I mean, I don't even think Fnatic's on the agenda, but it's like, where are they?
Yeah, true.
That's, what? Who?
Fnatic. Yeah, exactly.
Fnatic? Right? Oh, yeah, I remember those guys.
Yeah, crazy. No, but we're going to be seeing CC9 at Rivalcade, so we'll see this new lineup and see what happens. But Mendo, what does that mean for him and Rib? Like, are they going to leave the team? You know, I know they're going to be officially part of the roster for a while because that's just contracts, and we've seen C9 just hold people for a while, you know?
I mean, Grego just got released from his year contract from last year or something, so...
Yeah, so...
I don't think it makes sense to let him go, you know? I mean, obviously it sucks being stuck in contract jail, as the players call it, but I think from a business standpoint, it doesn't make sense to release him when Owl is this close.
Mm-hmm.
Like pay him the salary for 6 months and then potentially sell him to another org if that comes down to it or something. So, I mean,
it's hard to shop yourself if you're not playing, though.
It kind of is, but it's also like, I don't think Mendo has any problem proving his skill or.
Yeah, he's good.
I don't think there's any doubt that he's like a good player. So it's more or less just finding the right structure and team environment.
Okay.
But C9 team, I mean, the core of it's been having troubles. People always rag on NRG, I think, for underperforming, but C9 even at MLG, like where were they? You know, they didn't show up. They made roster swaps. They didn't show up in Korea, but
at the end they did. I felt like they were playing much.
Not getting to playoffs is not getting to playoffs, right? So it's
okay.
I'm just saying, like you expect more. You know, like you can. Yeah. I think that there's like a weird double standard there, but C9's had just as many roster swaps and just as much time to be like impressive, but I haven't really seen it. Okay. They have moments of brilliance every now and then, but so does everyone, right? So, I mean, good luck to everyone, but
right, fair enough.
It is what it is.
All right, well, next up, we've got, we alluded to it earlier. We didn't want to talk about Season 3 of Apex, given that, you know, Doa knows the specifics, and we don't want to put him in that uncomfortable position. But it was leaked that NRG and Rogue will be headed to Korea for the next season of Apex, which starts in the summer, I think, sometime in June. Or is it as early as May? I think
no, it's like as early as late April.
Oh, wow.
It's late April? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's like the 28th or the 28th.
Okay, never mind.
So it's 20-something, I think.
Wow, okay. So it looks like, you know, Seagull and crew are going to be headed out there, which a lot of people are surprised, you know, based on the fact that, you know, NRG hasn't played much. Rogue, I don't think that's much of a surprise. I think Rogue has been playing well, just proving themselves here at least so far, and get another chance to go out there. That's cool. But yeah, thoughts on this? I mean, thoughts on NRG just getting another shot out there?
I mean, I'm not surprised at all that they'd invite a team with that kind of star power.
Yeah,
I'm also not surprised that NRG would go. Obviously, they want to do everything they can to improve, and that environment is probably the best way to do it. Maybe. I mean, arguably. I think so, right now at least, for all the reasons that we talked about earlier in the cast. But yeah, I'm not super surprised about either of these. I think the bigger surprises are the omissions. No Envious this time. I don't know if that's because they decided not to go or they didn't get invited. I also know that Misfits, I think they wanted to play. I think Reinforced was tweeting about this or posting about this or something earlier. You know, they wanted to go back to Korea and boot camp and grind it out and try their best, but they didn't get the invite. And again, guys, this is none of this is officially confirmed. These are just rumors at this point, but good sources, I guess.
Yeah, apparently. But I don't know who the other two are. You guys have any idea what the other two?
No, there's only two.
There's only two. Oh, there's only two. Okay.
I think that's the leak or the rumor.
Yeah.
No, I think the two is almost confirmed. I'm not sure. I mean, I might be wrong, okay. But I'm pretty sure that there's been like a big push for OGN. Like they eventually want to get rid of the Western teams, I think, like at the end of the day.
Okay.
In general.
Well, that's half as many Western teams to root for. That's a little bit of a bummer. But hopefully our energy will, you know, at least have a good showing out there. They're not.
Korea hasn't been good to teams, like, historically. I mean, obviously, we don't have that much history. But when you look at it on paper, no team has come back from Korea and either not made a roster change or performed well. I mean, excluding Envious, I guess. Post-Mickey, which was, like, a miracle.
I mean, even Envious is now in a shaky spot in the current meta. That's a good point.
So. I mean, Triple Tank Soldier might be good again. You don't know, but point being that like NRG already went to Korea, the original six. They made roster switches like midway through Korea. They came back from Korea. They lost MLG in like the first round of four, I think. Maybe they finished top six. I don't remember. But Fnatic, I honestly have. I'm usually pretty well caught up in the teams, or at least what's going on for most of the teams. Fnatic is a black box right now. I've heard rumors of players leaving or them making roster changes, but
what's the last event they played in?
Korea
OGN. Yeah.
They went to Korea.
Literally.
And C9 too. C9 fell off the face of the earth. Now they're swapping players out. I mean, Misfits came back. They swapped their roles around. They didn't make roster changes. But again, like Misfits, you can say, is having a little bit of a rut right now. So Korea might be like the... Korea's like a test, but I feel like a lot of teams fail at the...
It's a mind...
It's hard. I mean, back to the Envious thing that Ben was saying, I think they just don't want to go back even. I'm assuming that they got invited or were asked at some point. But I know Timo and stuff were having a lot of hard... Like, they were having a hard time just existing in a hotel for that long. It's
understandable.
Rough. Yeah, I mean, guys, we're done with our 3-month stint in Korea hotel. Let's go back for another 3 months. Like, it's not an easy decision to make.
Right. Well, it's good. I mean, it'll be good to have Envious back here and playing in even these online tournaments. I personally am happy about it. But it is, with Apex happening, I wish Apex wasn't happening so quickly, like back to back to back. That was one of the issues I used to have with, you know, GSL and any of these Korean tournaments, just because it just takes away. Like, I barely even remember the last season, the previous season's champion, and then it's like immediately the next season starts, and then they immediately start playing somebody different, and they could be losing.
TV production, right? Gotta keep the,
I know, but it devalues,
series going.
It devalues like champions and or championships and things like that. But
yeah.
Okay, let's see. Last thing is win streak severity being toned down. What's that?
This was what Griffin tweeted us.
Right
before we started
the
show. Again, we're recording on Tuesday, so you all probably have seen this on Reddit by now. But breaking news for us is that they're toning down win streaks. And I think a lot of the high-level players are happy about this. The whole idea behind win streaks is, hey, if you're winning like 10 games in a row, you're probably way under ranked for where you should be. So you should gain more for the longer the win streak goes. And that's still going to be the case. They're just toning it down significantly. We don't know any more details than kind of just what that. But Flame, you're happy about this, right?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played much ranked this season. I've been taking a mental break from the ladder, but statistically, I remember last season specifically, there was this one game I had. It was on Noombani. It like sticks out in my mind because it was so funny to me. Like, this guy joins voice chat and he's like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And we're just like, what? Like, what do you mean you don't know what you're doing here? He's like, I started off this morning in Diamond and I've just been winning every game since this morning. And he like somehow climbed from mid, it was like, it might have been platinum. It was like mid diamond. It was like low diamond or high platinum all the way into like top 300 or something. Just like some lucky, crazy support win streak where I guess he was playing Lucio and Ana and stuff. And we were all just like, are you joking? He like linked us his page at the end. He's like, check this out. This is ridiculous. So it'll get rid of that. I mean, you don't want to be that guy because you start feeling like, oh God, if I underperform, this is definitely my fault. So it gets rid of that situation. And I think that there was a problem. I mean, there was a conversation this morning we had on Discord between like me and a few people where, I mean, is it really okay that you can get an account to GM in like 15 games?
Yeah.
Like that seemed like, you know, like there's like a question there that at a fundamental level, like, do you think that that's okay? And I think that this gets like makes that harder, which I do like as a player.
Okay. I mean, this kind of plays into Jeff, you know, had a post today too about smurfing and boosting and I guess his opinions on it. I think generally boosting, obviously super, he views it super bad. They're trying to make changes and or track it so that, that they can, discourage, you know, that sort of thing from happening. But Jeff said that smurfing, he doesn't think that's a big issue right now at all. And the fact, I think he even mentioned how fast people generally, you know, just get through those initial ranks, you know, all the way about, you know, up to GM if you are a Grandmaster player. So, I mean, your answer there, getting from, you know, nothing to GM in 15. I mean, I don't know if you deserve to be in GM. I don't think it's that big a deal. I mean, I think when you're talking about the guy that you ran into, that's a bigger deal because that guy is obviously outside the scope of which he should have been. And that's purely because of streaking.
Well, there's also like the case of like, say you bring your diamond friend to GM in like 10 games and just leave him there.
Well, that's boost. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the whole boosting thing. Yeah.
Are people paying for boosts and then suddenly it only takes you like a day to get someone from diamond to GM and then you give them their account back? I mean, it happens a lot and people do pay money for it. And it's a problem if you're a player and there's a lot of players like that because it is so simple. It's not other games. It takes like weeks and weeks sometimes. But this one you can do almost in like an afternoon and a half. So,
yep,
I'm not sure.
All right. Well, I think that's it for the news, guys. And no questions this week, too, from email. But if you guys do want to email us questions, we can read out on the show and hopefully provide some great insight on something that you've been wondering about. Go ahead and email those to or email us at theoverview@chainmanv.tv and we'll take a look at it. But that's going to be it, guys, for the show. Why don't we do some shout outs, wrap things up? Flame. Great always having you on here. Do some analysis for us on, you know, a lot of the events.
I mean, it's midnight, man. It's been a...
I know, man. It's late.
It's been a very long day. It was a good day. We got a good patch. I got to hang out with Doa a little bit. We got to talk some... There were some exciting changes to matchmaking. We got some changes to Lucio.
Yeah.
It's a pretty solid Tuesday, I would say. But, I mean, shout-outs to Normal, my Discord, and everyone on that supports me, and you guys for having me back.
Awesome. Fish sticks.
Go out there, try some Lucio. Give your feedback to Blizzard. Let them know how you're feeling about it on the Reddits forums. And the forums, because they do read it. By the way, if you didn't know that by now,
read it.
Then you probably haven't been paying attention. They do read that stuff. Go watch Overpit. By the time this airs, we'll be down to the very last bit of it. So Overpit finals will be this Friday. Make sure to tune in. Both NA and EU should be good stuff. We're going to see how the Western scene sans a couple teams like Envious and Cloud9 are doing. Upcoming is, I think, the next major thing in the West is the Alienware Monthly Melee, which we're going to see NRG participate in. So we're finally going to get to see this new NRG roster. That's going to be exciting. And yeah, I'm going to be playing Lucio, man. I'm going to try to figure this character out, see if he's still viable with all of the changes. And there were many. But yeah, great show. Good talking to Doa. Excited to have those guys in California. Hopefully we'll get to see them soon. Another great show.
Yeah,
we'll
big thanks.
See you next week.
Yeah, definitely. Big thanks to the three of you guys, you know, Ben, Flame, and of course Doa, who was on earlier. Fantastic show. Thanks everybody for watching also. And if you want to follow the Overview on Twitter, you can do that by following the Overview GG. And you can find the YouTube VODs on youtube.com/chainmanv, as well as all the previous episodes you can find there. And you can follow us on Twitter. The Twitter is going to be listed underneath too. You can see all that. But that's going to be it for the Overview this week. So for Doa, Flame, Fishsticks, and myself, Chainmanv, we'll see you next time.
You know.